One of the initial teachings of the Buddha was a very simple statement, life is dukkha, meaning suffering, incompleteness, unsatisfactoriness, something missing, something's not right. This is like the beginning point of this practice. Just to observe that, to recognize that, to get that, and in a sense to wrap your arms around it. It's a very solid ground for this practice. And then the Buddha went into how that is so, and also how it might change. So these four noble truths, life is dukkha, dukkha is caused by desire, or we might say comparison-mindedness, map-making, the attempt to change something because it isn't right. This is like the underlying motivation, the power underneath, the battery inside of this suffering machine. And then the Buddha said that when this comparison-mindedness, this desiring, tempting to change things, dies away, then suffering evaporates. Something new takes its place, and then described a process which we have gone through in all of these teisho, and including this one, this process that moves us in that direction. So these are the basic, they call them the Four Noble Truths, the basic teachings of this practice. It's very, very practical. And it is not magical. You might almost say it's scientific, but it isn't scientific in that you have to live through it, not just make a model of it in your mind. So this suffering aspect of life, you might say that ordinary life, the human condition, that which we have found ourselves in right now as a result of causes and conditions since the very beginning, or what could be called evolution, survival of the fittest. So the very fact that we're here is that we do this particular thing really, really well, therefore we survived. Therefore, this tremendous pressure to continue to do this thing, even though it does cause tremendous suffering, is we become incredibly, deeply, obsessively interested in what things are, what they are, starting with their name, a description, how they fit into a map, a puzzle, whether we like them, whether we don't like them. Then the value judgments get added, that this is good and this is bad, this is right and this is wrong, this is wonderful and this is evil, and all the rest of it. And everybody has to learn this. If you have children, if you've observed children, grandchildren, you see them going through this process, very intense process, every minute process of learning to name the object in the world, find out what they are, what is this object, what is its purpose, what does it do? So things get very separated out. We chop up reality, this what could be called single fabric of space-time, into little manageable chunks that get names and then have purposes. And then in the process of doing this, in the process of doing this to this world that we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and think about, what also arises strangely is a sense of an entity inside that we can't quite define but seems to have characteristics. So it becomes another one of these named chunks off of the fabric of space-time. So this chunk that is doing all this naming doing all this manipulating, and eventually doing actions that try to change things from one state to another. As we get older and older, as a child begins to realize they're an agent in the world, and then as someone learns a skill, and then has a degree, and then is given certain accolades, certain status, and then has power to make certain decisions and all the rest of it, and it all just builds and builds and builds. And then we try to understand the meaning. What did that person mean by that? What did they mean when they said that to me? What do they feel about me? What do I, and then there's a self inside, and this whole thing gets very elaborate. It's all about what things are, what they are. All chopped up, all defined, all in hierarchies, all put into slots, whether they're furthering my particular interest in that moment or obstructing it or neutral to it or irrelevant to it, all these things. And that's how we are here right now. So it was absolutely necessary. Could not have been any other way. This was the end result of causes and conditions. You call it evolution, call it the human condition, call it whatever you want. It's the way it is because if it could have been one other way, as our teacher Richard used to always say, it would have been that way, but this had the most going for it. So that's the way it is. So it brings about a certain sense of frustration, separation, despair, pointlessness. I achieve something, but then that thing no longer does it for me. I've got to go for something else. You know the whole story. I don't have to go deeply into this. How one thing leads to another, but you never get to the point where it's all done and you are satisfied. And what a wonderful thing that, you know, somehow there's this path that folks who feel particularly strongly about this type of suffering stumble into somehow. Now, this path is not about what things are. This is about that they are. That they are. Let me say that again. 99% of what we do as human beings is involved with what things are. And this practice leading to freedom from suffering looks at that they are. That they are. Now, to see that something is, you need to take the obsessive involvement, the energy spent manipulating and deciding and defining what things are and turn it into an observation that they are. And that is called Zazen. It's also called mindfulness, attention. So there's various techniques to do that. Counting the breath is the most simple and obvious technique, is that I'm counting something that really isn't numbered, and I'm just giving it a number, and I'm watching that number. The number has no meaning, except that it's one, then two, then three, then four. So it's very hard for me to do any more than do the count. Now I'm not so interested in what this number two means. It's that it's there. It's two. Three, four, see, that it is. What is that? What is that that? Now that is present in everything, whether we like it or not, whether it fits in a process we want or not. Whether it's obstructing me or not, whether it's causing me pain or not, that is present. It is. It is emanating this is. So a very important task in this Four Noble Truth pathway is to begin to disentangle from the interest in what things are and how I might change them from what they are here to what I want them to be here. All right, that desire process. I've got to make some kind of a flip, a switch, a movement. Now I start with the way things are, exactly as they are. The feeling of my body, the sounds in the room, the thoughts running through my head, the emotions constantly shifting, the reactions to situations in my life that day, all those are there. I simply stop pondering them, analyzing them, giving them any particular meaning, making them into a story, making them about an entity inside that has certain characteristics. Now I'm very interested in the fact that they are there. They are shining that. They are shining this am. This am. And I utilize them because that's what's here. Because if it was something else, that would have been what had all the causes and conditions that led to that particular thing. And that's what I would use to examine M. So exactly the way it is what I work with. Not something different. I'm not running from my life here. I'm simply stopping and looking at something that is hidden behind all the effort, the energy spent trying to figure out what things are, what they mean, what that person meant, what that means about me, what I need to do next, what I did before that was wrong and right and whatever, all those things, the so-called human condition, which is all there because that's how we survived. And if it couldn't have, if it could have been any other way, that's the way it would have been. Evolution. So that is this process. It's shifting from looking at what things are to that they are. That they are. Now when I notice that something is, I hold it in my mind. I hold it there. I hold it. The breath or a koan or the actual flow of moment-to-moment experience in shikantaza. Count if you're counting the breath. Whatever that object may be. I hold it in my mind. That's that initial step, what we call concentration. And this development of Jodi Ki, this power of concentration, this laser beam narrowing down to look very closely at something in right next to me. Right next to me. Not the flowing thoughts and analysis, all those thoughts that are all about what things are and what they mean and how they fit and whether I like them or not. I rather focus on this actual experience, the thing that is here. Start there. Then, obviously, because of habit patterns, there are reactions to that. Thoughts come in. A situation is remembered. All of a sudden I've lost that. I'm now back naming and struggling. So I've got to see that it is just as it is because it couldn't have been any other way. As I said before, it's as if it's already happened. By the time anything enters my awareness, all the other possibilities of what it might have been in this moment have collapsed into this one thing. Quantum physics talks about the collapse of the cloud of probability into this actuality, which in Buddhism would be called absolute. That's the absolute world, the world that couldn't be any other way. And this is the world that I am no longer interested in changing, doing anything about, naming. This is this dispassion step, very important step. Now all of these things are happening all together. We break them down just to be more accurate about it. But they really are happening as an organic process. Now, as my interest in what things are becomes irrelevant because I realize it had to be just like this right now. I am able to take the energy that was spent trying to figure out what it is and how it fits and what to do with it and put it into observing it, meaning noticing that it is there. It's fact. It's fact. What is that? What is its fact? What is that? I call it its fact, but what is that? You see? So I start by noticing that it's there. But I don't stop with the idea of that. I actually enter into its substance. What is that? What do I mean? What is that it is there? What did God mean when he said to Moses, I am that I am? What is that I am? What is it? What is it made of? What is its substance? What does it look like? Now as I look deeper and deeper into it, I see that on a certain level, all right, when I'm looking at this side of things, not the side with the form, it has no particular color or sound or smell. The fact that something is has no particular smell, has no particular sound, has no particular idea, has no particular sensation. I can't quite see it. It's almost like it's invisible. But I'm very curious, what is that? This is the beginning of this turning the light of the mind in on itself. It's a very, very important step. This happens organically. I can push it. I can orient my zazen towards that. I don't have to, because it naturally will, over a period of time, enter that as the dispassion, the disinterest, the boredom with the what things are, because that's what I do every day in my life. I don't need to bring that here. That it is. As I get curious about that, I begin to enter it. This is the beginning of this dhyana samadhi, entering this in our practice. And then something happens. Then something happens. The division between this side of the coin that has the form that I was always trying to name and fit into a category, decide whether it was furthering my interests or not, for all that machination, that side of the form and the side of its fact, I suddenly understand are absolutely one thing. One thing can't be separated. One thing. This is that leap, this is that kensho, this is that breakthrough. Suddenly understanding what you are, what mind is, what this am is, what its substance is. Then you can re-enter your life without fear. Then things in the world, situations in the world, this whole human condition doesn't obstruct it, doesn't get in the way of it. You don't have to withdraw from that. You don't have to become a recluse. You don't have to become a zazen junkie. But we need to go through these steps. We need to, particularly the step just before, we need to give ourselves time to go deeply into that so that this suddenly can emerge and we can really get this. Now I want to read a koan about this particular fourth step where this fact of the world is dissolved in the world. As in the third Oxfording picture, they talk about like it's like salt and water, binder and paint. It's dissolved in the world. It doesn't stand apart from the world. Now I want to read this koan. This is from the Hekigan Roku. This is case number 86. And the Zen master hears Uman, and Uman appears many times in Hekigan Roku. This was a really wonderful Tang Dynasty master. He was a master of words as well. He knew how to put things in a very pithy, direct way, almost a shocking way. And there were various ways that he would use words. I can't remember exactly how they described them in Zen teachings and literature, but listen to the words he uses here. So this is Uman's Everyone Has His Own Light. Uman said to the assembly, everyone has his own light, though when you try to see it, you cannot. Everything is darkness. Everything is darkness. What is everybody's light? What is this light that when I turn the light of the mind in on itself has no color, form, sound, smell, taste? What is its substance? What is it made of? What is it? He answered himself, saying, the temple storeroom, the tower gateway, the temple storeroom, the tower gateway, the incense burning in the censer, the sound of the airplane overhead. Do you hear that, I am? Do you see that light? And then he also said, a precious thing isn't as good as nothing. A precious thing isn't as good as nothing. This is it. This says it all. A precious thing, these things that I want to hold on to. All the effort at finding out what this world is so that I can hold on to the things that I want that are precious to me, that are furthering my interest, and get rid of those that aren't. These precious things aren't as good as nothingness. It's that, shining from everything. Because then I'm not stuck, I'm not trapped. I'm not chasing after something that when I get it, I realize wasn't precious. The precious thing was right over there. I got to go get that. No, that wasn't it. It's got to be this. The human condition. A precious thing is not as good as nothing. Nothing. That things are. I'll read you one other thing about this. So this comes from a book called Minding Mind. Very interesting book, translated by Thomas Cleary. And this is from a Zen master named Ijo. And the title of this particular piece is Absorption in the Treasury of Light. So he talks about this koan too. So I'll just read this here. So this Zen master Ijo says, the great master Yunmen, or Umman, 39th generation from the Buddha, said to a group in a lecture, all people have a light, but when they look at it, they do not see it, so it is obscure. What is everyone's light? No one replied, so the master himself said on their behalf, the communal hall, the Buddha shrine, the kitchen pantry, the mountain gate. Now, when the great master says that everyone has a light, he does not say it is to appear later on, nor that it existed in the past. Yeah, that's important. He does not say that this light that you have, or as the Buddha said, all beings have Buddha nature. This light, this Buddha nature, this mind with a capital M, it's not something that you will someday achieve and attain or awaken to. It doesn't say that. Nor did it exist in the past, nor that it becomes apparent to a view from the side. It's not that there's something I've got to go find somewhere. He is stating that everyone has a light. Everyone has this light. This is exactly what is meant in the overall sense by the light of great wisdom. It should be heard and retained, enjoyed and applied in the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. And then he goes on and says, the light is everyone. Is everyone. Shakyamuni and Maitreya. So Shakyamuni is the Buddha who brought these teachings of Buddhism. And Maitreya is the mythical future Buddha who will come. Shakyamuni and Maitreya are its servants. Its servants. What is not more in Buddhas or less in ordinary beings is this spiritual light, light. So it is existence in all. It is the whole earth is a single mass of fire. So this is how this master puts it. Everything is shiningness. Everything is emanatingness. So this is our practice. It's not what things are, it's that they are. So when we sit in our zazen, this is the way we orient our minds. Okay? All right.
So let's see if we have any time for questions.
I think we have a little bit of time, so I'll open it up for some questions.